Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Fill My Eyes with Poetry. Happy Friday. I hope everyone had a wonderful week, and I hope you all have a great weekend to follow. That being said, it looks like we have a really good board tonight, and we have some great callers. So let's start here. Great caller number one, Pam Ray. Hi, Pam Ray. How are you today? Don't mind me.
You know what? I am doing great. Good to be here.
Blame it on the coffee. I'm glad you're here too. Blame it on the coffee because it's going to be a live night tonight. And
all right.
Hello. Hello, Rexon. How are you tonight? Oh, my God.
All right. What's going on?
Oh, not too much. I'm drinking coffee at 10 minutes to 10 at night. How do you think that's going to pan out? Oh, yeah.
You're going to be up way into the hours.
It could be. It could be at like a really late night. I'll be a late night poet. I haven't been a late night poet in ages. You know, I've been going to bed early. So now maybe, I don't know. This could go one way or the other. Guess we'll figure it out. Oh, my goodness. Okay, and now we have great caller number three. And we have Laurent. Hello, Laurent. Welcome to the party.
Thank you. What's in that coffee besides the coffee, Jean?
Bailey.
It's got you in a good mood. Got you in a good mood. I like that. Hey, Rex.
Oh,
hey,
I'm, good,
What's up?
Hey, Lauren.
I'm not good news, but sure as hell wide awake. Oh,
just a wee bit to the Irish in it.
Just a wee bit. Just a wee bit. Oh, my goodness. So, let me see. We got a nice board tonight, I think. I think we have about 20-some pieces, 20, 21, 22, something like that. Last count, I had 20.
26.
God knows what I have. What's that, hon?
26.
Oh, God, I think it's time for me to just shrivel to the ground. That should be tricky. But I'll tell you what. I'm going to have you start off some way that I never have you start off, Rex. I put a piece up. And I put a piece up because today is Cinco de Mayo, or was Cinco de Mayo. It still is some places. We're working on it. And I have a little piece, which I didn't think was all that great, but it got me a gold in a contest. So I'm going to put it up and start the show with it since I did nothing for Cinco de Mayo. So, yes. So, Rex, here we go. Whenever you're ready.
Sure. Cinco de Mayo, bye, fill my eyes. Grab the tequila, margaritas for all. A shot of 150, take two, they're small. Coronas and lime, let the party begin. Drink in remembrance of this declarative win. Mariachi's on standby, soon they will play. Cinco de Mayo celebrated this way. Fiesta, fiesta in Pueblo today. Celebrating the battle in 1862, defeating Napoleon, a victory true. Tacos and ceviche, enchiladas and friends. Next we'll be dancing and drinking as evening descends. So grab a sombrero, toss it out on the floor, a Mexican hat dance and a salsa for sure. So seeing it is for family and friends, bebe y bailar, may the fun never end. End poem.
Happy
right.
Cinco de Mayo.
Good you.
Oh, that was for fun.
Laurent, you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Start us off.
Yeah, this poem grabs all the elements of Cinco de Mayo, tequila and margaritas, and one is named, 150. The Coronas and the lime, the mariachis, all the elements of Cinco de Mayo, including some Spanish. But what is impressive is the rhyming. It's a very tight scheme, short lines. It has a nice rhythm. It's one of the nicer poems I thought this game was written. And a gold winner. Nicely done.
Thank you, Ron. Pam?
Yes, I thought this was a wonderful write to start the night out with. Definitely perfect for Cinco de Mayo. Great rhyme and imagery. I like how you delve into the two sides of Cinco de Mayo. You know, the history of it. With where you say celebrating the battle in 1862, defeating Napoleon, a victory true, and then of course the festivities of it. So grab a sombrero, toss it out on the floor, a Mexican hat dance, and a salsa for sure. You know, wonderful festive lines and very well done.
Thanks, Pam.
Well, I'll second that, considering you dipped into quite a bit. From those first two stanzas, I thought you were going for an all-out party, but, boy, you dropped in a whole lot. Tacos and ceviche, enchiladas and friends. And I wasn't expecting the Mexican hat dance. Nice touch with throwing that one in there, as you say. So grab a sombrero, toss it on for a Mexican hat dance and a salsa for sure. And the cena it is for family and friends. Bebe y bailar. Bebe y bailar. May the fun never end. Well, that is a perfect thought to Cinco de Mayo. Hey, have fun, but don't overdo it because you don't want the party to stop.
Right. Yeah, but the whole point of the contest that I had entered and written it for was just they wanted something more factual than just, you know, the big party. The reason behind it was. So I tried to capture that.
Right.
And that's why I thought it was good for today, because a lot of times when Cinco de Mayo rolls around, everybody talks about, oh, we're going to have Mexican food tonight, we're going to do this and we're going to do that. But the real meaning of it, the party, has been forgotten. You know what I mean? And that was where I intended to go. So I said, yeah, let's pull the old one out and just throw it
out. By the way, have you ever tried ceviche?
I have. I've actually made ceviche. It is yummy. I have made ceviche. I made it for a baby shower once, and I made this huge bowl full of it because there was supposed to be, like, I don't know, a ton of people there. And it really was, it was fun, but it was good. But, boy, you talk about being a bear when it came down to, you know, portion, like the different how much citrus to how much shrimp and what have you. Because it was such a big amount, it wasn't real easy for me to do. But we pulled it off, and it was yummy. Everybody,
that's right, you need that citrus to help quantify and kind of cook the ingredients.
Yep. Yeah, so it was kind of fun to do. It was good. Everybody kind of enjoyed it. I would do it again, but I'd do it on a much smaller scale, because I think I must be used anywhere from 3 to 5 pounds of shrimp, you know, when I made it, because there was a ton of people coming. it was a lot of citrus, too, let me tell you, sitting there squeezing oranges out of my mind.
I've done that for a few hundred people. It is a lot of work and a lot of stuff.
Yeah, but that was fun. It was fun. You know, something I'll never forget. So, hey, and this week we're cooking Polish again. We're making pierogies, just in case anybody wants to know. Get your orders in early. Just saying. They were such a hit 2 weeks ago when we made them that now my daughter says, I want more pierogies, Mom. Oh, God.
Oh,
only a little bit of work. Yeah, it's only a little bit of work. You know, but it's a challenge. I like it. I think we did them proud. So now we're making them for the Polish side of the family, so God bless me. That's all I can say. See what coffee will get you? I get all crazy. Okay. I guess I'll shut up and find a poem, huh? Sounds pretty good.
Sure, if that's where you want to go.
Well, it's the poetry show, man. The cooking show is every other Saturday, or every third Saturday of the month or something. I don't know. Pick one, Pam. Tell me when it is. Okay. We have 5 carryovers from last week, which sadly were carryovers from the Wednesday before. So we're going to start this show off, besides the Cinco de Mayo poem, we're going to start the show off with a touch of Frisky Friday. So, let me see. Ms. Pam, can I get you to read the next one for me?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. There you go. Here we go. This is called Wrapped in Nude by Jenny the Deep.
Splashes of red wine stain the carpet as you hold your head at my heart. Summer solstice, season of romance, swinging feet to feet as we dance, making our way to the balcony, interlocking our knees horizontally, letting our hips sway to our pulsing beats, bound together by white satin sheets. Rolling in sangria waves of passion, heat rises, intertwined in nude fashion, perspiring, intoxicating fumes, endless summer love blooms. Aloe vera rains on us, cooling love's burning flame, taming our animalistic behaviors while we lay and poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. And Gene, we're going to start with you. You got to unmute first.
Did an early start on it. I am.
Well, we didn't comment on you last time around, so you get to comment this time around.
Telling you, the mute button is going to be the death of me. I thought this was a nice poem written by Jenny. This is for one of the 2 contests I ran for my last Wednesday show, the week before this. And I thought she did a nice job. This is one with the wine glasses and just 2 images, one of a man and one of a woman. And I think that she did a really nice job. She starts out with that dance and I thought, yeah, that's a good one there. And she got the idea for Cinco. Good thing I saved it because it was talking about sangria. So we add that into the Cinco de Mayo, you know. So very well done, Jenny, and a nice central piece. So very, very well done. Thanks for sharing with us.
Nice. Thank you, Jean. And Laurent, how about you?
Copycat.
Yeah, I'm copying it right. I'm copying. Go figure. I was very taken with the title of this, Wrapped in Nude, because the word is used in a manner that you wouldn't normally. And the rhyming, I think, is exquisite. Summer solstice, season of romance, swinging feet to feet as we dance. There's a very nice rhythm through that. And I like how the dance becomes something else, interlocking our knees horizontally, letting our hips sway to our pulsating beats, bound together by white satin sheets. Again, nice rhyme, tells a nice story. Jenny's done a good job of this. I like
it. All right, thank you. Pam, what about you?
Yes, this is a wonderful sensual rite, filled with desire and love and romance. I like how she brings the nature and imagery into it, and I particularly like rolling in sangria waves of passion, heat rises entwined in nude fashion, perspiring intoxicating fumes, endless summer love blooms. Just wonderful lines and very well done.
Nice. Thank you, Pam. I think you're right on the thought with sangria, Jean, but she rolls it in just about every line. The red wine-stained carpet, summer solstice season,
yeah.
Interlocking horizontally, pulsating beats, sangria waves of passion, heat rises,
mm-hmm.
Perspiring intoxicating fumes, endless summer love blooms. So she's hit the heat angle all the way through it. And even with that that ending couplet, aloe vera rains on us, cooling love's burning flame, taming our animalistic behaviors while we lay. So she's kept up the heat with the passion and the flavorful intermix of color, the red wine, the sangria, and pulsating beats and everything else that went with it. So it is a heated piece.
Yep.
Nicely done, Jenny.
Okay. I guess I need another piece. Okay, Laurent, I have the next one up for you. Well, I almost have it for you. I have two up. Make sure everything's working away, of course. What the heck? Okay. My screen wanted to run away with that one. Okay. This is a piece by Daniel Duhane. Really?
I'm not saying
it. I know. It just did something crazy, so I don't want to lie. Anyway, this is by Daniel Duhane, and it's called Sex Goddess.
Yeah, I got it now. Oh, all right. Sex Goddess. Very good. Sex Goddess. She was my sex goddess, exuding with hot, steamy pleasure with her hypnotic eyes transfixed on mine. Every dream of sexual pleasure became an almost uncontrollable passion leading into paradise. With her body pressed against mine, I felt the wondrous curves of her back pressing against me like a vice. I smelled the aroma of her liquid perfume falling from her body like sweet honeydew drops. She led me to a place of ecstasy where I floated upon the clouds of her heavy breathing as she squealed like a banshee bringing doom. End poem.
Great read, Laurent. Thank you very much. All right, Pam, you get to lead.
What do I get to be? A commenter numero uno?
CC.
All right.
Yes, because I was on mute, so it was your turn.
Well,
oh,
I think this is a fun, sexy rite celebrating feminine sexuality and lust And I really like how he not only brings in the physical elements or the visual elements of sexual pleasure, but also the aromas. And I smell the aroma of her liquid perfume falling from her body like sweet honeydew drops. She leads me to a place of ecstasy where I floated upon the clouds of her heavy breathing. You know, nice touch there with the heavy breathing and the aromas. So wonderful, right? And very well done.
Well, thank you, Pam. All right, Jean, how about you?
I think Daniel did a great job with this poem for the contest. I think it was just nicely done. He hit different notes with different thoughts, and I like that as well. But here, every dream of sexual pleasure became an almost uncontrollable passion, leading into paradise. With her body pressed against mine, I felt the wondrous curves of her back pressing against me like a vice in a death grip. Well, that's one way to do it. But just really nicely done. And thank you, Dan, for entering the contest and joining us on the show tonight with your permission to read. That's it.
Nice. Thank you, Jean. And Laurent, you got to read it. How about you?
You know, the majority of this poem, with the exception of the last stanza, it's sweet, it's good, it's loving, it's sexy, it's seductive. I mean, you can really get into it. It's got some great lines. And the acknowledgement of a body pressed against another one, when you're lying at like two spoons, the sensation of that particular posture is very satisfying. I think most people like it. But then the last stanza brings us to a place of ecstasy, but it's a dark ecstasy. We have heavy breathing and a person who squeals like a banshee bringing doom. Now, that's a very unusual sound. I would pay a lot of money to hear that particular noise. A unique ending. Great poem. Love the piece.
Nice. Thank you. Daniel gets into the heat with this too. Hot, steamy pleasure. Uncontrollable passion. Then that third stanza was a nice touch. I like that ending line in that third stanza. Pressing against me like a vice in a death grip. That's kind of the interlocking moment where you realize there's a bit more going on here as he encapsulates in that last line. But I also like the fourth stanza, and I smelt the aroma of her liquid perfume. Smelt. Nobody uses that anymore. And that hits on that notion of being so hot that you're boiling something down to its liquid essence, that the smelting of metals. And then I thought, even to the last stanza, the first two lines were perfect. And as she squealed like a banshee bringing doom at me, it kind of rolls back to the thought with the first one, if not a guy's transfixed, and the passion leading into paradise. Well, that hits me with the idea, this is one very, very deft female, the succubus, but boy, is she bringing it about the end of time on that last line. Nicely done, Daniel. All right, Jean, we're coming up.
Remind me, coffee before 10 o'clock is never good because I almost said something very bad. Okay. The next one. <I'm kidding. laughs> Almost. Okay, this one's called South Sea by Perfect Sunset. I'm going to try and give it a whirl. So, God bless us and save us. Glass shower glistens like a crystal beach, luring us in with its sensual tendrils, black lace tight on my peach skin like melted candle wax. My vixen brown eyes flickering wildly for you to press your body into my soft moon bosom. Ingest my foxglove, rose, and vanilla musk perfume, breathing me in like a flower bed, igniting a fire within. You that needs to be quenched in cool shower waterfalls, where my lace slips off the bare skin, faces you, driftwood rising from the South Sea. Pulling me in close to your bronze thighs as we watch ourselves in the mirror, stained with pleasure, your lush coral lips kissing my spine gently. Then Rich's espresso and thunder until I tilt my neck and our mouths melt like soft twisted pretzels. Moans pouring from my apricot lace breath, water washing over our skins like silk, with each insertion a girth I embrace, deep within, like the depth of a coral reef, my clamshell gaping wide, coral wet and pinning for more, pining for more, of you within, the seabed of me. End poem.
Great read, Jean. Thank you very much. Laurent, why don't you start with you? What'd you think?
Well, I think Perfect Sunset has decided to explore and push the envelope on metaphors. Has given us some metaphors that I haven't read before, created with them something that seems fresh and new almost in terms of two lovers. I like the way that, where is it? Moans pouring from my apricot lace breath, water washing over our skin like silk with each insertion, a girth I embrace deep within, like the depth of a coral reef. The references to the sea in this were numerous, and I always like the ocean, the sea, and she does a great job with it. That shower glistens like a crystal. Nicely done.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Pam?
Yes, this has wonderful imagery and metaphors. I really like the way she plays with words and plays with sensuality. Where especially where it says, luring us in with its central tendrils, black lace tight on my peach skin like melted candle wax. And then I really also like breathing me in like a flower bed, igniting a fire within you that needs to be quenched in cool shower waterfalls where my lace slips off and bare skin faces you, driftwood rising from the South Sea. You know, wonderful lines there, beautiful sensuality, and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Jean, how about you? Bada boom.
Anyway, back to what I was
saying.
Bring
your phone upside down.
I thought this was wonderfully penned and the metaphors were well done. A sexy piece all the way around and very much enjoyed. Yeah, it was a great entry to the contest and a wonderful share for the show. Definitely well written. So thank you so much, Perfect Sunset. Excellent job.
I'll agree with that. It's definitive in what it offers, where it's going, and how it's written. But it's offered up within the language of being something a little bit more different. My Vixen Brown Eyes was a nice touch opening that second stanza. Flickering wildly for you to press your body into my soft moon bosom, ingest my foxglove rose and vanilla musk perfume. A nice touch there, something sweet and alluring. And then breathing in like a flower bed. Very same stanza, writing at the bottom, driftwood rising from the South Sea. You understand the motif, you know what's going on, but it's carefully worded so it doesn't offend anybody, but actually walks along the line. Everybody can ingest easily and enjoy the emotion that's been spilled. Just like the until I tilt my neck and our mouths meld like soft twisted pretzels. Another nice touch right to that stanza. And the back end of that last one was really good too. My clamshell gaping wide, pearl wet and pining for more of you within the seabed of me. A great piece alluding to the ocean and beach while playing off the visuality of that which man and woman do together. Nicely done. Perfect. Thank you. All right, Jane, right back on you.
Okay, let's see now. The next piece I have is for you, Rex, and this is called Satin and Lace by Cedar Chapman.
Satin and Lace by Cedar Chapman. I've compromised, sold a pound of my flesh for the taste of flesh. Threw away the dusty textbook branded by my mother and every other mother who has a son. Tonight, my armor hangs in the closet as decades of chivalrous covenants shall fade into the moonlight. My thoughts swirl like the spiral DNA that swarms in my blood, the wild calling of the tapestry that makes me a man, while you slowly peel away each layer of satin and lace. I'm not permitted to touch you, but only allowed to just sit and watch in agony. Every muscle aches, every fiber clenches to hold me back from ravaging your soft, milky skin. I itch to explore every crevice with my fingertips, lick each minuscule pore, so to send you arching your back and tremble in a firestorm seizure. Only then can I gaze back into those piercing eyes to remind you I'm your man, lest you forget. At the last piece of your lingerie flutters onto the carpet, you guide me like the foolish wooden marionette who thought he had control. Each ounce of your curvaceous womanhood pulls my strings to move wherever you wished me to go. We meld into the bedsheets, blending musk and jasmine perfume. And I, like a boy king smitten in defeat, chuckle at the smidgen of victory searing into my brain, desperately clasping onto the image. You still had stilettos on your feet. And Gene, that was one of your pictures. Why'd you start it?
I love this. I love this poem. Cedar Chapman never ceases to, never ceases to amaze me, but he never fails to capture the essence of the prompt. I think he did a fabulous job with this piece. Wonderful wording throughout, and it was just really, you could just go with the story, you know? You could be right there in the moment with it, and I think it was just really, really well done. Cedar, great job, as always, and thanks for sharing. Much enjoyed.
All right, thank you, Jean. And Laurent, how about you?
Copycat.
Dueling mutes. Laurent, did you walk away? He's lighting a cigarette right now. Sorry, folks. We'll be right back in a minute. Pam, would you like to lead us off on this one?
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, I think this is a wonderful right, sensual right. I thought it had great imagery. He really is a talented young poet, that's for sure. And I like how this is about that desire and that sense of control that somebody has over you. I did have to laugh at his response when somebody asked him if he was in a dominant submissive relationship. And he said, that would be too much for my weak heart to handle. I won't read all the whole conversation, but I had to laugh at that part. this is an absolutely wonderful right, and I like how it's about giving in to that masculine DNA that just wants and aches for that feminine sensuality. Every muscle aches, every fiber clenches to hold me back from ravaging your soft, milky skin. I itch to explore every crevice with my fingertips, lick each minuscule pore so to send you arching your back and trembling in firestorm seizure. Only then can I gaze back into those piercing eyes to remind you I'm your man, lest you forget. Wonderful lines all the way through and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. Laurent, you back? I got to go that first stanza. I like the thoughts he drops in here. I carved my soul, a pound of my flesh for the taste of flesh. The ease and notation of giving up all those things that he's held to heart or been drilled into him to walk into this atmosphere that builds upon itself. My thoughts swirl like the spiral DNA that swarms in my blood, and but only allows to just sit and watch in agony. My tensile strength sitting right there, and then every muscle aches, every fiber senses a little more intensity growing, and then that last piece, at the last piece of your logic flutters to the floor. You guide me like a foolish wooden marionette who thought he had control. Again, still building, but that last one offers up the finale, but also a little bit more. And I, like a boy smitten in defeat, chuckle at the smidgen of blood feeling into my brain, desperately clamping onto the image of everything that's gone on. Then he drops in that little touch of humor at the bottom end. You still had stilettos on your feet. Hey, the lady's wearing spurs. She's got to dig into you somehow, so you might as well enjoy the ride. Laurent, you back? Okay. I thought I heard. I guess that's coming back to Eugene.
That damn Eugene. I keep telling you he's not around. Nobody ever listens to me. Damn, I'm going to put this next piece up for you. This is, oh, by the way, that was the end of our Frisky Friday. I hope everyone enjoyed. They were well worth waiting for them. Okay, Pam, the next piece I'm going to put up is by L.G. Mace, if you would be so kind.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much.
Reaching for the Stars by L.G. Mace. The sky is ablaze with a million sparkling diamonds on the clear night's backdrop of the darkest black velvet. Perhaps around her almost invisible floats spacey fog. She wears celestial spider's weavings cold in her. Perhaps a trillion miles away, a star is dying, but to her eyes, its brightness doesn't change, for the speed of light cannot be seen by human eye. It continues to share the celestial skies with its siblings. In her imagination, she dreams galaxies away of another civilization that may exist much the same as ours, but different, tower-like crystal castles spun out of gauzy stardust and the inhabitants in tier-like royalty to the lowest peasant. Does her dream prince live there, a universe is away? Her heart jumps the distance, shooting up into the skies, heaven-bound, not shackled by the laws of gravity. She zooms through wormholes and ends up where? A place far from Earth's Kansas, never needing the wizard. Her heart has spun her own magic, reaching for her gleaming. She finds herself face with him, her stardust prince. But the skies start to fade as night dies and day is born. And just for a second before the last stars begin to fade, she finds herself sadly, once again, heavily earthbound. Only the cobweb remnants of her cosmic dreams remain. Heartbroken in a cruel reality, she finds herself reaching for the stars. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. And Jean, let's start with you.
You know, I like this piece. It was for a contest, Starry Night, a picture prompt. And I think with that in mind, that this is fabulous. I mean, it was really good without that thought. But I think that really is the tie that binds. You know what I mean? It pulls it even to the prompt. But it was a wonderful expression of thought, great imagery all the way through. The dream prince is the evasive dream prince. You know, we have to go and hunt him up. I get that. And a place far from Earth's Kansas, never needing the wizard. Her heart has spun her own magic, reaching for her gleaming. She finds herself face to face with him, her stardust prince. But the skies start to fade as night dies and day is born. Isn't that always the way, guys? Isn't it always the way? But it was just really well done. And I thought she did a nice job based on the prompt and just in general. The writing was good. a nice story, LG, and thanks for sharing with us.
Dang. Damn, you got to read it.
Yes, and I thought it was a wonderful poem, great storytelling, but also, you know, a nice metaphorical angle on how you can, the most loneliness comes like at night, either at nighttime when you're lying awake just before falling asleep, or right after you wake up from that beautiful, those beautiful dreams of love fulfilled. I really liked the imagery in this, and I like the wondering, like, does her dream prince live there universes away? Her heart jumps the distance, shooting up into the skies. I also really liked where she threw in the whole Wizard of Oz reference, a place far from Earth, Kansas, never needing the wizard. Her heart has spun her own magic. I like how those lines speak on that thought, that you have that magic, that power to fulfill your own dreams inside yourself rather than depending on somebody else. But wonderful lines throughout and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. Laurent, you back?
Okay.
Okay, not funny. All right. That second stanza kind of struck me. Perhaps a trillion miles away, a star is dying, but to her eyes, its brightness doesn't change. For the speed of light can not be seen by human eye. It continues to share the celestial skies with its siblings. I thought that was a nice note, and it helped filter in a bit more. But the funny thing is, the speed of light at its constancy, during the course of a year, that light spans, I think it's 5.85 trillion miles. So she offers that trillion miles to start with is that sort of something a little bit on the close. And she hits that with the, she dreams galaxies away of another civilization that may exist much the same as ours, but different. Tower-like crystal castles spun out of gauzy stardust, and the inhabitants in tear-like royalty to the lowest peasant. And then again, does her dream prince live there in the universe's away? As Pam had on that note of the Wizard of Oz, the folk of Kansas, and the heart spins her own magic, reaching for her gleaming. She finds herself face-to-face with him, her stardust prince. But the skies start to fade as night dies and day is born. And it hits on that, as Pam said, that note to her dreaming and just waking in the right moment where dawn emerges and everything comes to a close, so to speak. So nicely done, LG. Thank you very much.
Yep. Okay. Now, the next piece I'm going to put up is called Crazy Days by S. Sharp. And Rex, if you'd be so kind as to ask me to comment last, I would appreciate it. So here we go.
All right.
And I have an audio. Ooh. And it is
Crazy Days. Graze a path to reliance on meats. Populations explode. Populate the world. Small farms disappear. Mass production farms explode. Millions of chickens jump on the sword for food hourly. Step up. Crow. Bare your breast, soldier. Take your place in the pecking order. Is it appropriate I examine your breasts in the supermarket? Can I make you nuggets or wings? Have I told you what a nice legs you have? 800,000 cows gave their lives in the last 60 minutes. Step up, get that butt, them tenderloins moving. Become a steak. A burger, be the headliner for the show. Barbecues, fast food delights, shish kebabs. 214 million turkeys die the hard way yearly. Not dropped from a helicopter by WKRP in Cincinnati, but by coming to the fork in the road, or the one on the table. Let's just say, thanks for giving. 124 million pigs come squealing to market each year. Chop, chop. sometimes a little sweet, other times a little sour. Yes, this little piggy went to market. The days of the small farm have disappeared. Mass production facilities now rule. What's for dinner tonight?
Great read, Scott. Thank you for the sound clap. It is very much appreciated. All right, Pam.
All right. I really liked this one. And as always, it's great to hear him read his own poem. You know, to me, this was a great combination of hard-hitting imagery and humor and wonderful pop culture references. You know, I particularly had to grin at the reference to the turkey dropped from the helicopter by WKRP in Cincinnati, that infamous scene in that show. You know, I watch that on YouTube and still crack up on it. You know, this is wonderful wordplay here, you know, and with 800,000 cows gave their lives in the last 60 minutes, step up, get that butt, them tenderloin move in, become a steak, a burger by the headliner, be the headliner for the show, barbecue, fast food delight, shish kebab, you know, and I like how it not only speaks on the topic of gluttony, but also speaks on the disappearance of the small farm and how, you know, manufacturing at high rates to meet the demand by the greed of the consumer has put the small farms out of business. You know, the days of the small farm have disappeared. Mass production facilities now rule. What's for dinner tonight? Wonderful lines and very well done.
Nice. Thank you, Pam. I like the humor in this, too. Is it inappropriate I examine your breasts in the supermarket? Could I make you nuggets or wings? Have I told you what nice legs you have? Alluding to the allure of shopping center romance, what people go to the supermarket for. That bite with the thought with WKRP, I remember that in the last national sex. But I thought they could fly as hundreds are streaming out of the helicopter. And the bite with, yes, this little piggy went to market. And the last stanza, the days of the small farmer disappeared. Mass production facilities now rule. Once we did it, by yeah, the small farms have, but that's deliberate. The only way to make business work is by chewing up those small arenas because you want control. And when things go on the short side, that control leads them to more profits or bigger profits for these larger companies because they're all built on that. There are still some smaller arenas out there. I got a place down the road I can get eggs from, and there is a small meat place around here. Plus, hey, there are still places down here. If you grow your own cows or you hunt deer, they will butcher the meat for you. They will keep the scraps. They charge reasonable. So there are still places out there that do it. And the fact is, we were raised on those small farms. They were always local, and they tended to the local consumer. But as large cities grew, they got swallowed up in the big machine. And unfortunately, most people don't understand or even know what a small farm looks like these days, let alone understand where. Hey, you go in the city, and hey, where do you get your milk and eggs from? Oh, we get them from the store. Where do they get them? Oh, we don't know. No intelligence anymore. All right. We're coming back to you, Gene.
Yes. I thought this was a well-penned piece by Scott. The loss of small farms sadly turned it out. Big business is ruling the market. I thought there were a lot of clever lines throughout this piece, and the points were well made. I had to stop and 124 million pigs come squealing to market each year, chop chop, sometimes a little sweet, sometimes a little sour. Yes, this little piggy went to market. Between that one and the the pecking order of the chickens, I thought was another clever stanza. Anyway, there were a bunch of good stanzas in this and many good lines. So thank you, Scott, for sharing. And I kind of remember the WKRP episode.
Oh, I
don't
do.
Ask me.
What an image.
Yes. Yes.
And then in mind, but I thought they could fly. They got wings. Yeah, big doofus.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. That was their live Thanksgiving turkey giveaway, which turned out to
yes.
smash turkeys on the pavement in Cincinnati.
Oh, my God. Okay, let me see what I have here now. Laurent, are you back? I'll take the other one. Okay. Let me see. I have... Rex is going to bring me back to you, I believe.
And
Sam just bring me back, so I guess I'm not going to ask her to read anything for a minute or three. Good thing I was heading your way, Rex. Okay, here we go. This piece is To Kill a Poem, Don't Do It, by Nuno Cardoso. So whenever you're ready.
To Kill a Poem, Don't Do It, by Nuno Cardoso. Heading into Chesterfield, tobacco ounces, diving slim fingers in fields of dry loose leaves, and placing them carefully on thin Samson white paper lines that roar for fatter gazelles and roll in lower quality figs, making an amber leaf purchase and getting off my bum this late at night would be too much of a hassle. Strolling in the rain-filled clouds that pour in Lisbon's mud-soaked cobblestone streets, of Portugal's eyes that weep for silvers, bills, stoves, and pantry shelves of empty gods, I think of what to come up with next. Overthrown by the fire that bursts from within, smoldering poems I'll never write, into ash and buds put out on, black asphalt of springs that never jumped. I put this tombstone phone down, making this line forth to last, taking words with a meaning beyond humanity, defeating the gin bin that pens find themselves in before taking the time to kill a poem. And poem.
Wow.
All right, Gene, we're going to start with you.
That's right. I hope so, because it's only you and me, kids. We're it. Go figure. Well, Pam said be right back. I think that this is an intriguing poem. He's going down the road. In the beginning, where he seems like he's out of cigarettes, you know, and he's got to take a walk in the rain, to my naked eyes, that's what I see. And, he's like putting it off. But then overthrown by the fire that bursts from within, smoldering poems I'll never write, into ash and buds put out on, black asphalt of springs that never jumped. I put this tombstone phone down, making this line forth to the last, taking words with meaning beyond humanity, defeating the gin bin that pens find themselves in before taking the time to kill a poem. It's like, yep, I just can't do it. I just can't do it. So I think it's a pretty clever piece, because it starts out going one direction and then you get into the real nitty-gritty of it in the last two stanzas here. And I think it was very well done. Clever thoughts here. And says, seriously, and the author's note, seriously, don't do it. So, I guess the idea is, don't just get rid of it. Don't just give up on it. I would think you just put it aside. It's about writer's block. So, nice job, Nuno, and really well done. Clever. Clever, clever.
I like that opening stanza. The reference point, he's got Chesterfield cigarettes, the slim fingers, Virginia Slims, the tobacco ounce, the dry loose leaves, and then the Samson white paper lines that roll for fatter gazelles and roll in lower quality cigs. Nice touch there, making an amber leaf purchase and getting off my bum. This late at night would be too much of a hassle. That also goes to the thought of if you did that, you might actually extricate yourself out of what you're already into, because by the time you finish out, you already got into writer's block. So the thought of going out and dipping into tobacco by going to pick up some cigarettes might alleviate some. But besides, he's a bit too lazy in the moment for that. And so everything kind of distills from there, strolling in the class of foreigners and mud-soaked cobblestone streets of Portugal, guys that weep for silver, bills, stoves, and pantry shelves of empty gods. I think of what to come up with next. Another great stanza there. And I like that third one. And the fourth one, I put this tombstone phone down, making this line fourth to last. I thought that was a great note there. But also not forgetting that it's within the phone. So he hasn't lost it before taking the time to kill a poem. That kind of hit on the note of maybe you go a little bit too far in your editing. So what started out with a thought gets lost in the remix. Nicely done, Nuno. Thank you very much. All right. I guess it's back to you since it's just us.
Okay. I guess it's still just the two of us. Woo-hoo. It's a party.
No,
Laurent joined us again. It was nice of you to join us. Hi, Stelina. Okay, so let's see. We got Stelina in the room, which is good. Hey, we're getting back here. What was Christmas? Let me see now. Where am I headed? Done. Okay. Okay. Put this one up. I'm going to have you read this one. It's called The Away Game by Ben Hart.
I'm sorry. I didn't hear you very well. Did you say me?
Poem up for you to read, and it's called The Away Game by Ben Hart.
Got it.
So whenever you want.
The Away Game. 1. Stasis. Ever notice how the same places feel smaller upon staying, as though the rearview mirror is leaving without you? A monument to the difference between emptiness and nothingness. Somewhere on the horizon, back roll this part of the contrast to someone. The betrayal. It's cold outside, 1:47 a.m. Outside the east gate, as the airborne brigades of rain invade, and I may voice my objections, drown out the thunder, but 23 years worth of screaming still won't drive the clouds away. And I'd say, wait for me there, will you? Pearly gates and greeting. But I cannot ask her to give it all up, just pour away with words. And the maybes, such promises, worth about as much as the dust that will become of us. It will be all right across state lines and landslides, and that God will have been our loving audience, watching from the opposite side of everything, and that we will have lived to where to be bereft of breath and function, be exhausted in love by touches tender gathering, where the softest parts of me was a temperate tribute to the intimate ritual that creates life. But my dear, you're killing me, one loving cut at a time, and I feel it bite back against my billy teeth and my tongue, beautifully bitter like wine with the sweetness of death. I dare not close my eyes for fear of missing the exodus of the storm, or that I will discover your promises were about as good as mine. And if you must fly, leave all of my longing behind. Darling, just go. Never let me know you did love me back. I would not wear it. Still, will you wait for me at the pearly gates of dreaming? Only then shall I sleep. Athria. I told her the story about the place It's sometimes high. Then we're safe with time because time will not be outlived. But hey, you can come with the place with kind calcite cliffs, the breakers charging like bulls at the walls, the coastside cathedrals. Try to catch the lost souls burning, shining so bright upon their fall. But should they come to the sea, turn back to the earth, how the fields will sway and guide them by the waist into the rhythm of the wind to fulfill a promise that you will be lighter than you've ever been, because gravity has been weighing me down. And I could crawl, I guess, and never make a leap of faith again, or I could push back all I have and escape with the sway. Another wall will always have my back. I must untether myself if I'm ever to be free, free enough to believe that I'll still be able to be on understanding I'll never love again. And that though angels fall sometimes, God loves every devil, just who they are. And it's not up to us to tell her not to bring them in from the cold. And she cried and said that it may be the most beautiful thing she was ever told. But, and I will never really understand how these words keep rearranging into the different sentiments, the same crushing sadness. A thousand truths and a few pretty lies. Thank you, poetry. It's been a ride. Only the greats care enough to pay it forward, to surrender themselves to the violent love of the suicide muse, to sacrifice the way we look in lovers' eyes and instill in them our pain, and martyr ourselves the inherent emptiness that is and always will be the inspiration. The away game. The last 8 years of my life were the away game, when it still asked, how have you been? And I replied, been high. And I forgot how to feel for a while. But if you ask my sister, she'll tell you how she watched her brother die. And now upon his darkest hour, he was met with a friend. And though their name escaped him, he knew he was loved. And so we faced the rain, you and me, against the world, alone. Again, and I know this is all we have ever known, but what would you say if I said I was thinking today? Because I can finally hear them singing the only anthem they have ever known. The faithful are calling, calling all poets, calling all poets home. End poem.
Great read, Laurent. Thank you very much. Pam, are you back? Jean, you want to kick us off?
Boy, you
okay.
Are real quick to jump off of people, aren't you?
Yeah.
How long you were going
to
be gone.
You don't even give somebody 2 seconds to respond.
That's
we don't
right.
Have we don't have time to waste around here, guys. You know, let's be real. Yeah, we don't have time to wait 2 seconds, darn it. yes, I am back. I am back, and I thought this was a wonderful write, strong imagery and metaphors, you know, all the way through. I like how it takes us through a journey of looking back and looking back at the discovery of love and the loss of love and the idea of telling yourself never again, but knowing that it's something that you want in the future. A beautiful ending, you know, all the way through, great lines, you know, powerful lines. I really like, I told her the story about the place I sometimes hide, somewhere safe from the tide, because time will not be outlived, but hey, you could come with. I like how those lines speak on the idea of, you know, sharing something deeply personal, with someone. And I also really like A Thousand Truths and A Few Pre-Lies. Thank you, poetry. It's been a ride. Only the greats care enough to pay it forward to surrender themselves to the violent love of the suicide muse. Wonderful lines and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Jean, how about you?
You know, I thought this piece was really, really well done by Ben. You know, he has it listed under poetry about depression and suicide. And in this piece, it shows, you know, this wonderful love in the beginning. And, you know, the one line, and I say, wait for me there, will you? At the pearly gates of dreaming. But I cannot ask her to give it all up, just to pour away with words. And maybe such a promise is worth about as much as the dust that will become of us. And, you know, that was just the first vignette here. I mean, it's a long piece, but it's a well-done piece. You don't lose interest in it because of the length. You want more. You want what's coming up. And, you know, then there's the loss, you know, which is well expressed in this. And though the war will always have my back, I must untether myself if I am ever to be free, free enough to believe that I'll still be able to breathe upon understanding I will never love again. You know, because sometimes, you know, love is just so deep that you can't just, you know, kind of brush it off, or you feel like you brush it off. Actually, you feel like you make less of it because you want to move on. You know, so it's a hard spot to be in there. And then the ending was just the next stanza was about the fin, you know, the finish. And martyr ourselves for the inherent emptiness that is and always will be the inspiration. Just great lines all the way through on this. And then the away game was just, you know, amazing. That very last stanza of that I thought was just pretty amazing because I can finally hear them singing, the only anthem they have ever known. The faithful are calling all poets home. I'm not going to guess on that, but yeah, I think we all can kind of get that. But it was very well done and very well expressed all the way through. So many stanzas and so many great lines. So excellent job, Ben, and thanks for sharing with us all.
Thank you, Jean. Laurent, mm-hmm. you got to read it. How about you?
Hugely impressive piece. He writes outside of the box. He doesn't stay on familiar territory. He constructs his stanzas in a fashion to, I don't want to say confuse the reader, but you have to pay attention to what he's doing. And I wish I had read this at least once before I had a chance to read it aloud, because there are stopping points that I just blew through. Other points where I should have paused, but I didn't. I was looking for one of the, oh yeah, this stands up, and that we will have lived to where? Be bereft of breath and function, be exhausted in love by touches tender gathering with the soft parts of the, was a temperate tribute to the intimate ritual that creates life. He begins in this sentence every time. He drops down, and yet it's part of a longer sentence, and it's it takes a little bit of getting used to, but once you see what's happening, it becomes very, very different. I like the different sections and the way he writes to the place behind calcite cliffs, where breakers charging like bulls up the walls of the coastside cathedral. That is enormously impressive writing. It's an image that is familiar and yet unfamiliar at the same time because of the way he phrases it. I mean, there are so many, as Gene said, there's so many good stanzas, good lines, and it's hard pressed to pick out one particular bit. But what a story this is. What an ending. Calling all poets. calling all poets home. It's remarkably unifying in the way it makes me feel about poetry and people. Outstanding piece.
Nice. Thank you very much. This was had me thinking. Well, Jean hit on the idea of depression. Yes, I see that in here, but I also see a couple others. Some of the a menage a trois of depression, a little bit of psychosis, and even a touch of bipolar, because you got these glorious tidbits to highs and some really serious lows. Like at one point on the back end of this. Where he says, where was it? When they still ask, how have you been? And I replied, I've been high. And I forgot how to feel for a while. But if you ask my sister, she'll tell you how she watched her brother die. There's almost an institutionalized note in that because of the thought up front, the last 8 years of my life were the away game. So it's on that idea of being a little bit over the edge. But there's, and the back end of this, calling all poets home, there's almost a note there to the Robin Williams, the Dead Poets Society, delving into those classics, those easily sought poets who died early because of one malady or another or some mental issue that drove them over the edge. So it kind of hints a little bit on many levels to a lot of things. But the highs in this are beautiful, and the lows are very low, and it walks a tight path. So nicely done, Ben. Thank you very much. All right, Jane, we're back up to you.
Okay, I guess I'm supposed to do something now. Yes, I am. Narantis wrote that one. So now, where do I go? I guess I go to, I don't know. I'm not sure. You guys got me all screwed up running in and out. See? Hope you're all happy.
Oh, no.
I'm coming to you, Pam. Oh, now my foot. Here we go. Okay, Pam, I'm going to put this piece up for you. It's called This House is Full by Darkened Auras. And I'm sorry if it's like, I don't know when you read this. So here we go. Whenever you're ready.
This house is full of family, grandparents, parents, bro and sis. I'm the one they lost long ago, but not one they seem to miss. This house is full of blow-ups. Sis got pregnant by some dude. Parents don't approve of it or him, as it has soured the entire mood. This house is full of grieving. Grandpa has passed away, and grandma goes through the motions just waiting for her day. This house is full of misery. Grandma has joined her love, left this hell on earth for her, and went to home above. This house is full of screaming, dad's drunk and bro on drugs. It's a deadly mixture at dinner. Fist fights replaced the hugs. The house is full of depression. Dad's always getting smashed at bars. And sister lost her baby, new wounds to leave invisible scars. This house is full of bloodstains, gunshots to leave four dead. Dad shot his wife, his son, and daughter, then put a bullet in his head. This house is full of silence, just the way it had been when I died and became a ghost. Mama's youngest, only 10. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. And Jean, you want to kick us off?
No, because I was, sorry, distracted. I'm going to read it real quick. Though. I'll be ready for you when you get
all
there.
Right. Yeah, Laurent, how about you?
Wow. This is a very powerful piece. The beginning line in the stanza, this house is full of, and then he hits us with family, arguments, sadness, misery. This house is full of screaming, dad drunk and bro on drugs. The deadly mixture at dinner, fist fights replace the hugs. What a way to communicate to the reader the misery that exists in that home. Each stanza almost more devastating than the next. Then you come to the end, and the child is the narrator, who became a ghost. Mom is young, it's only 10. It's just, it's a lot to take in terms of sheer misery and pain that envelops some families. And to have a family entirely gone through murder, suicide is, well, you know, you don't want to think those things happen, but they do. And it's nothing pleasant to think about. But it's just the way Dr. Norris has managed to really visit a dark corner of the world in such a way as to make it palatable and beautifully written, beautifully live. Very nice.
Thank you. All right, Pam, how about you?
This is a great dark poem on the subject of a family annihilator type serial killer murder. Great rhyme and flow, powerful imagery. I have to admit that I was really thrown off by this write. I mean, and I thought it was an excellent write. But it suddenly took such, I mean, it was dark all the way through, but it took an unexpected, extremely dark turn, which, you know, I enjoy and appreciate because I like it when people, you know, delve really deeply into that darkness, that psychological darkness of a family falling apart and someone, you know, snapping and at the end of their lines and all the pressure of life just building up. And I like that you find out that the narrator of this is the ghost of a young child. And I really like where she goes, this house is full of depression. Dad's always been smashed at bars and sister's lost her baby. New wounds to leave, invisible scars. This house is full of bloodstains, gunshots to leave for dead. Dad shot his wife, his son, and daughter and put a bullet in his head. Really great lines there, not only because it's visceral and touches on an extremely difficult subject, but it shows a knowledge that the majority of family annihilators are, you know, husbands and fathers. So excellent write and very well done.
Thanks, Pam. Jean, how about you?
Hello. I remember this. It's my turn. I thought this was very painful. And sadly, such things do happen in this crazy world. So it that in itself makes it more so, you know, painful. I thought it was well-penned and an eye-opening piece because as you're reading it, you're going, oh, you know, when you're kind of putting two and two together, it's almost like watching the news in a strange kind of way. And I'm with Pam. It did take a strange turn at the end. I wasn't expecting, you know, where it went in the very last stanza. This house is full of silence, just the way it had been when I died and became a ghost. Mom is youngest, only 10. That totally I was unexpected on my part, you know, and I think everybody could probably agree with that. But I thought the story was well done. So nice job, Darkened Ours. Good piece, you know.
Absolutely.
That
first and last stanza is important because it shows the inflection point of what happened. Look at that first stanza. The house is full of family, grandparents, parents, bro, and sis. I'm the one they lost long ago, but not one they seem to miss. That's the inflection point of where everything started to go downhill. It was probably with the grandparents, and everything evolved over time going one generation to the next until they're all finally gone. And then it's down to dad, mom, the brother, and sister. And she, at that last stanza, this house is full of silence, just the way it had been when I died and became a ghost. Mom is youngest, only 10. She wasn't part of this generation. She was the beginning of this generational curse. What happened to her, disappearance, whatever it started with her. And now she's at the end of the tether offering up everything that's gone on through the last, must be at least 60 plus years. So great piece there, DA. Thank you very much. Boy, Jean, come on back to you.
Okay. Wow, I feel like I'm treading water here. Okay. This is what I'm going to do. Okay. I'm going to put up a piece that whatnot here with us. Whenever you're ready, Laurent.
All right. I don't often repeat poems, but this one, for some reason, I felt I would. It's called Adieu Bernard. Color has fled the world. All is brown and black. Crater sky betrayed its blue, and the sun extinguished its light. Flesh fashioned for the farm scrambles to a new profession. Rough clothes and old guns misfire, and fire uncertainly. Tu tues, tu pleures, comme les camarades meurent. You kill, you weep, as comrades die. We were among the first to resist, anger and revenge fueling us. Invaders, abstract figures in the fog, were easy to pick off at first. The tanks and planes are beyond us. We lay hidden, waiting. Mon esprit aspire son jumeau. My spirit yearns for its twin. Fleur de mon cœur, that portion of me living in her. Future of France grows in her womb, where young lovers planted wonders, the flower in the spring, now become a bitter season. Scraps of paper, stub of a pencil, precious, small, and strange. Knuckling down to broad strokes, all caps, not a lowercase moment, under the bombed splatter, descending like a red rain. Ma chère Mary France, I fear I'm going to die. No, we, all of us. Le Buff fell yesterday, strapped on the head. Jean-Francois today from a mine. World has ceased to exist. Nature replaced the bleak horror of its parts, scattered and unrecognizable. I have become like a child, less than a man, terrified of the night. No mother at the doorway to soothe away this nightmare. Will I ever wake again or breathe again without the heavy weight of fate riding my shoulders, whipping me to my last uncertain shudder? Je t'aime. Adieu. Bernard. End poem.
Great read, Laurent. Thank you very much. And Jean, you want to kick us off?
Sure. You know, I thought this was another well-penned piece, Laurent. You know, your pieces on war and the tragedies and travesties thereof are always wonderfully worded and nicely done. I think that it carries a lot of weight, this piece, because it comes from a place inside that's, it does, it just makes it heavy and it makes it oppressive to, from the place it comes from, if that makes any sense. I think it does. But a very well done piece. So thanks for sharing it with us.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jean. Pam, how about you?
Yeah, I thought this was a wonderful write. Powerful imagery and metaphors. I like how it's written as a vignette and also as almost like in the form of a letter from a soldier to someone back home. The lines were brilliant in their presentation, with the mixture of English and French for the sense of authenticity to it. And I like how you bring in this first-person narrative that has a lot of different characters in it. And it's such a hard-hitting presentation of the idea of the heart of a poet that finds its themselves caught in the middle of war. So wonderful lines all the way through. But I especially like world has ceased to exist, nature replaced with bleak horror of its parts scattered and unrecognized. I have become like a child, less than a man, terrified of the night. Wonderful lines on the raw honesty of admitting fear in such horrific times. You know, very well done.
Thank you, Pam, and you're right. It was intended to be a letter.
Cool.
I'm going to bite hard at something a little different. Because of the way it's writ, I see this as a World War One. The idea of that new age come upon us, all things horror are now unleashed to a populace, especially those on the front line who had not ever seen the likes of before. And within that, I also see this as that ambulance driver on his brakes jotting down some notes in working up to the books that he will write there past this moment in history. It's kind of like Hemingway, the ambulance driver during World War One, picking up soldiers, but also doing some writing. It hits on that, the idea of seeing things for the first time, offering up those little notations with the French, ma chère, mother's like I am. I feel I'm going to die. No, we, all of us. And the description of LeBeouf and then Bernard dying. But also, color has fled the world, all is brown or black. Traitor sky betrayed its blue, and the sun extinguished its light. That kind of has me thinking of Hemingway, just for the thought of its description, its opening notes to where the full story might go as it's fleshed out.
Thank you very much, Jay Tomlin.
Oh, you're welcome. All right, Jane.
Okay, Dougie. Tell you what, this next piece I'm going to put up is a collaboration between Arcana and Stellina. I'm going to put that up, and I have an audience for that, called When Spirits Dance. So, here we go.
Hushed, haunting phantasmas, whisper of times gone by.
Lamented spectres float fluidly through hallowed halls.
Once bustling blithesomely mid arias of mellifluous music.
Now mere idyllic essences in spectral, swirling mists.
Shrouded in shadows as captivated eyes watch in wonderment.
Spellbound by these gossamer ghosts calling out from the ether.
Cascading spirits melt into pools of misty miasma.
That ebb and flow waves, rippling upon rivers of remembrance.
In an ectoplasmic dance that gracefully glides the air.
Like a waxen waterfall, spilling torrents of chiffon clouds.
They harmonize in choirs, singing songs of murmuring melodies.
Billowing assignations that echo from bygone trysts.
Inhale. In a child's gaze of dreamscapes, born of idyllic illusions.
These vaporous visitants yield visions of their former glory.
Faded facades don alabaster costumes of shimmering silk,
enticing her into realms of fairy fantasies and mystical musings,
of transcendent tales told through alluring angelic ensemble,
pirouetting in ethereal enchantments of beguiling ballets.
These elegant encounters lead recitals from the past
in theatrical renditions of mesmerizing masquerades,
as innocence embraces this twirling Orphic opera
that spirals into fantasies founded in fairy tales,
where pallid princesses prance with their princes,
whirling on foaming seas of snow-white dove.
Great read, Stelina Onakata. Thank you very much for SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And Laurent, why don't we start with you, please?
I wanted to write a really long comment on this particular poem, but you haven't given me any time whatsoever. But first of all, the pieces are stunning. I'm looking at the image, and I'm seeing something that looks like it was a black and white photo, or of a painting, perhaps, that was then colorized. If you've ever seen a colorized picture, this reminds me of that for some reason. It looks like a painting out of the fantasy period of the 1930s. There were a number of artists whose names I don't remember anymore who had this style. It's really eerie, and when spirits dance, it certainly seems drawn from that. I have rarely read language as rich, as visual, as what we have here. It's really pretty stunning. Cascading spirits melt into pools of misty miasma that ebb and flow, waves rippling upon rivers of remembrance, in an exoplasmic dance that gracefully glides the air like a waxing waterfall, doing torrents among clouds. I read it and I just, the word choice, billowing assignations, I mean, really? That's brilliant. It's very impressive. And those voices, oh my. You know, this poem floats into the mind. An eerie blend of haunting melodies and spectral voices, giving voice to images. Really pretty stunning. A great story and a great poem.
All right. Thank you, Ron. Pam, how about you?
Yeah, this is a wonderful collaboration. Great imagery and metaphors, wonderful use of alliteration. Shrouded in shadows of captivated eyes watching wonderment. I also like the use of the phrase ectoplasmic dance, and an ectoplasmic dance that gracefully glides air like a waxen wind waterfall spilling torrents of chiffon clouds. And the stanza after that, in a child's gaze of dreamscape born of idyllic illusions, I really like how this speaks on that world that is beyond the veil, that world of spirits, and how children are more open to such things, and oftentimes in their own way have a deeper understanding of that which is beyond the veil. And so wonderful write and very well done by both of them.
Thank you, Pam. And Jean, how about you?
I knew I was going to almost get caught. I thought this was just a wonderful piece. Beautiful thoughts throughout. I'm usually more tuned in for a darker write from Arcana and Selena, and I thought this was just wonderful. Lovely imagery shared in the remarkable write and great alliteration throughout. I thought it was an excellent collab and an awesome audio. Nice job, you guys. As always, well done.
Thanks, Jane. I'll tell you what, the production must have been forever ongoing, singular line by line, definition, back and forth between the two. That took a long time to put together. Now, the thought, the picture is grand, and the bite within it offers up quite a bit, because it offers up two people, man, woman, who died in the house, obviously are now bound to it for all time. And the thought of offering up the cascading spirits, melted pools of misty miasma, and it's almost a little playful game that ripples through this by offering themselves up to the child and be seen as fairies, even though they know they're more than that. The child is young, yes, but it kind of reminds me of a little bit of Beetlejuice. Remember the what's it, Gina Davis and Baldwin? They were the dead ones in the attic to start the place, and they were doing the haunting. They were the illusion to everybody, and it was it kind of walks on that very same note of you get out of it what you see in it, and child's brain, like Pam said, sees and understands a bit more when it comes to the angle of death and seeing ghosts, fairies, imps, trolls, whatever the thought is, because they haven't outgrown or been untaught the fact that there are some things beyond that which is on reality scale with us. So I like that for that reason. Nicely done, you guys.
Absolutely.
All right, Jane.
Okay. I still don't feel like I'm getting anywhere, but I'm going no matter what. Rex, if you could read the next piece for me, it's called Mind Games by Poetic Picasso.
Okie dokie.
Thank you.
Mind Games by Poetic Picasso. No SoundCloud? That's unusual. Okay.
No, yeah.
Life can never be the replica of dreams, for 'tis only the guise of a yearning hope. To be a dreamer does not require nothing more than a mere imagination. The mind is a wonderful invasion of thoughts, or the terrible waste of expression. What we believe to be actual reality can manifest in realization of nothing. Ergo, the mind is like a Victorian piece of a game of chess in movement. It can contemplate between the correct calculation or the miscalculation. Ipso facto, the mind is the cynosure captivating our sentient awareness. It can evolve into distinctive action or be corrupted by a false impression. If one is bold enough to play the game, then one must be prepared to win or lose. Mind games are the peak of our fascination or the downfall of impulsive infatuation. Like the pensive nature of chess, an opponent observes studiously the other opponent, cautious of the trap. Perhaps to the ordinary thinker, mind games are proclivity of doltish naivete, and to the intellectuals, they are a profitable display of exploitation. There is a contrast by which we measure our civility, one that is invoked by the intuition and not the instinct. For you see, the mind is the inference from which we derive ideas, yet 'tis also the point to our self-destruction. What is the mind but motion in the intellectual sphere, the origin to our creativity, or the falsehood to our identity? What are mind games? They are simply all that is or all that is not. Agathopathological, like it or not, the oldest game of the mind is deceit. One can either play this game or not. Checkmate. and poem. All right, Pam, you kick us off.
Okie dokie, Smokey. Well, first of all, great read there, Rex. A wonderful write by Frank. You know, I like when he goes into his more philosophical writes that are oftentimes based on Oscar Wilde. Really thought-provoking lines throughout. I like the metaphor of the game of chess. That's a different game. I particularly like how it speaks to me on the nature of anxiety and how easy it is to play mind games, not only with other people, but with ourselves, and it becomes our own downfall, you know, and great lines all the way through, but I especially like, what is the mind but motion in the intellectual sphere, the origin to our creativity, or the falsehood to our identity? Like it or not, the oldest game of the mind is not deceit. One can either play the game or not. Checkmate. Checkmate was a great way to end this poem. And I really like how this looks into the mind and the different twists and turns that it can take when it comes to individual thought. So very well done.
Nice. Thank you, Pam. And Laurent, how about you?
Very interesting piece. I agree with Pam. His Oscar Wilde pieces, I think, are really his best writing. The this exploration of the mind and mind games is very, very interesting because we so often have daydreams, fantasies, whatever have you, about how things should be and how they are. And sometimes that doesn't really square with reality, but it's just our perception. And the mind is perceiving something in a certain way. And it's not necessarily what is being perceived by other people. And people play mind games with each other. One line in particular really strikes home. When you see the mind is the inference from which we devise ideas, yet is also the point to our self-destruction. The mind can indeed blow you up, make your life miserable, create an inner demon that never stops talking to you. And it urges failure, if you will, that doesn't see any value in striving for something. And it's an evil voice. And I would love to know what agathocatological means. I can't even pronounce the name. At any rate, checkmate, yes, is a great ending, man. I agree with you. Great poem.
Excellent. Thank you, Laurent. And Jean, how about you?
You know, I thought this was another great piece by Frank. I love the chess references in the piece itself, and I thought it was very well expressed by him. Much enjoyed the piece, and it was nicely done. How else are you going to end a piece with a poem with chess references in it, except for the same technique? You know, I think that was a perfect ending. I agree with you both. So thanks for the share, Frank, and really well done. And congrats on the honorable mention. Nice.
Thank you, Jean. All right, agathocatological is the container of both good and evil, something that resides within. When it hits on that, what is the mind but motion in the intellectual sphere, the origin to our creativity, or the falsehood to our identity? Kind of hits me up with a note of Dorian Gray in that thought there, the idea of understanding who and what you are, tending towards the evil, but having a portrait of yourself to keep the good bared as that facade while the ugliness continues to be drawn into this painting, but you're not allowed to look at it lest the destruction walks within itself, which is you, your death at that point. That kind of hits me with this idea. It kind of walks on that very same note of Dorian Gray and how one must live on that edge. You got to learn to play the game. You got to be one chess move ahead of the next person lest you slip and lose your way, because you don't ever want to be on that cutting edge of being forced to face your own demons. Nice, Frank. Thank you. All right, Jane.
Okie doke. Well, the next piece I'm going to put up, Laurent, I'm going to ask you to read, and this is called The Journey by Dan Dischino. So whenever you're ready.
Yes, ma'am. I will do. Stories of Eternity, Part 1 of The Journey. Standing on the shores of eternity, I dream only of the nightmares that brought me here. Child of the Vesuvian madness, when the Mother Earth that held me tight attacked her children with burning ember hell, a never-ending haunting that plagued my sleep. What is a child to think of a second chance at life when so grotesquely made to understand death? Lost are the orphans of the world, dressed in confused smiles and desperate hands, in the eyes of survival, lost in a blink at childhood's end. It is hard to make sense of a journey when you do not know the end that you seek. Everything I am seems a puzzle, with pieces thrown about the floor, missing ones to connect. I remember wondering as a home, and always the quest of what belonging is. I remember a horizon of mountains and the paralysis of fright that brought my soul, of one that opened up to consume the world that fateful day. I was in front of an army, an insect in a city of giants, but with nothing else but compliance with direction. I followed the others, and the giants welcomed us in their arms. We cradled, but I lost faith in humanity. At night, the screams woke me as if hell was laughing with poisoned pitchforks. I glanced outside, and I was destroyed within. Demons with painted faces and bloody spears were destroying everything. So I hid, undiscovered as small precious things often do. Days of quiet passed before I emerged. There was nothing. I was betrayed from the earth, betrayed from humanity. I understood alone. Survival is routine, and traveling is just the desperation of hope. Protect, hunt, steal, find, you. My lexicon is limited, and let the trees be my shield. Only want, let little birds be my song of warning and comfort. Let travel be my armory, to cover me with shadow from the eyes that only look straight into the direction of self, to weaponize my mind in the world I have seen. When faced with eternity, it's amazing how everything you were can live within a blink. What has chased me from my home? What has pursued me to move, to finally stop ocean edge? The world ends at my feet's beginning, and here is my destiny, and here is destiny, clear as a winter star beyond the horizon.
Great reading. Oh, thank you very much. And Pam, you want to kick us off?
I can't because I just got back and I need time to read it.
Okay. Jane, how about you?
Well, thanks, Pam. Just throw me under the bus. It's okay. I get it. You know, I thought this was a very profound piece by Dan. There's so much sadness throughout. But when you get to the end, it's the world ends at my feet's beginning. And here is destiny, clear as a winter star beyond the horizon. So I think that that was just a wonderful way to finish this piece out, because it just rings of hope and a more positive future. At least that's the way I see that stands. I thought it was an excellent work. And, yeah, just a great job all the way through. So and there was on a contest on refugees, and I think that he really, I think he nailed that whole thought. So great job, Dan, and thanks for sharing.
Got it. Thank you, Jean. And, Laurent, you got to read it. How about you?
Well, I don't think you found a short poem for me to read tonight. poems are epic. They have such a lot to say. I'm a real fan of Dan DeShino's phrases like, child of the Vesuvian madness of the Mother Earth that held me tight, attacked her children with burning ember hell, an ever-ending haunting to plague my sea. Now he introduces us to volcanoes and the effect that they have on a population, on children, for instance, who may have lost parents, lost are the orphans of the world, dressed in confused smiles and desperate hands, in the eyes of survival lost in a blink of childhood dead. What a great stanza that is. And I don't think, well, maybe it is. Gentleman's Zen was a famous novel by Rice, the guy who invented the satellites, Frederick Pohl. But I forgot that at any rate. It's a great book. So he takes us on this journey. And it's a journey I told it fairly abstractly of what happens when you have to leave home. And he's kind of personifying the volcano and its effects. And the way he writes about it is really pretty stunning. I really like this piece.
Excellent. Thank you. Pam?
Yeah, I thought this was a wonderful write. Strong imagery and metaphors. I like the first-person narrative and how it speaks on the idea of someone who starts out with a childlike innocence and then discovers through time and through experience that the world is full of cruelty and rejection. And they're standing at that edge of eternity. They're standing at the right after death, you know, looking back and seeing all the times that people started out helping and then turned their backs, seeing the way that life takes those unexpected turns and how it's a dog-eat-dog world and how we must learn to look out for ourselves in such times. It's just really emotive and extremely sad. I really like protect, hunt, steal, find, move. My lexicon was limited, and let the trees be my steel from the evils that only want. Let the birds be my song of warning and comfort. You know, the thoughts throughout this are very profound. And very well done.
Thank you, Pam. It's kind of bites at the notion of destruction, then being embraced, then being offered up, then engaging, because it hits on that demons with painted face and bloody spears. We're destroying everything. Going from having the destruction wrought on, then joining the army, an insect in a city of giants. The giants welcome us in their arms. We cradle until I lost all faith in humanity. And then the screams awaken the poison pitchforks and realization dawns that he's become part of the madness himself. And then does the only thing that he can to save his own mentality, which is to secrete himself somewhere away from everything and fend for himself at that point in time and learn in that fending. And to come out the other side with that sort of the last lines that Gene hinted on for the closing. Nicely done, Daniel. Thank you. All right, Gene, we're back on you.
I don't know. You think we can squeeze in another short one?
Sure.
Maybe we should try. Okay, let me go get it. This is a piece by Poeta de Cabra.
Oh, yes.
And, this is... and Rex, if you would do us the honor and read this one, that would be great.
All right. Jean and Eugene by Poeta de Cabra. Never in so much love had two people been than the love shown between Jean and Eugene. I'm in love with you, Eugene, said Jean, and it's Eugene I love, replied Eugene. A more gorgeous woman I've never seen than you, my true love, my sweet loving Jean. Met on that late night radio, where had you been? For I fell head over heels in love and sight unseen. She replied, to be honest, I thought I wasn't so keen. Laurent was wonderful, passing me over to Eugene. Doing all the work on my own, frustrated I'd been. Soon accepted your help, didn't mind if you intervened. Busy we were, Laurent and I, you were a great go-between. Now I'm addicted to your love, like a smoker to nicotine. Since two of them met, their lives have been more serene. No greater love ever than the love of Jean and Eugene. And poem. Oh, well done, there, poet. All right, Pam.
Oh, yeah, this was great. This was great. Wonderful humor, fun lines. You know, I've been waiting this whole time for Poeta to write a poem about Jean and Eugene, and it finally has happened. You know, a more gorgeous woman I've never seen than you, my true love, my sweet loving Jean. Met on late night radio, where have you been? Fell head over heels in love and sight unseen. Great line, so, and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. Laurent, how about you?
Off mute, maybe.
Oh, yeah, well, I began that way. I might as well finish that way, right? Oh, well, I've long wanted to do something with Jean and Eugene. And to find out that Poeta did it was, well, that's sheer delight. And he's got his tongue tucked firmly into his cheek, and he is giving voice to something that I think is really rather wonderful. You merit all praise, Jean, and so do you, Eugene. The sun is poetic.
Wonderfully said. All right, Jean, what do you think?
Oh, now you were supposed to go first. I thought this was just hysterical.
All right.
When he wrote it, thought it. Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, that first stanza is a blast. I'm in love with you, Eugene, said Jean, and it's you, Jean, I love, replied Eugene. What a nice tongue twister to finish off that first stanza. and it does kind of hit on hint at the idea of where it was born to begin with, as a casual slip of the tongue in the moment.
Honest to heaven. When I read it, I was just cracking up because Poeta started that whole darn thing, you know, with the Eugene. You know, everybody, all confused, especially me. I'm like, what are you talking about? All of a sudden, I caught it, and I was like, oh, my gosh. And, you know, how many times does someone say Eugene to me during a show? So I just got a real good clip out of it.
I remember that night well. He was the one that caught on to it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then ran with it. And it's been it's been the trademark since then. Eugene has to make an entrance somewhere on the evening Fridays.
Yep. And every time I hear it, like even though it's just an innocent, okay, back to you, Dean, I get a chuckle because he really had his going that night. It was pretty funny. So excellent work and a lot of fun there, Poeta. And thanks for sharing it with us. There's something to smile at, something to laugh about. So it was a good piece, and I'm glad we got to share it tonight, even though we had to wait till the, you know, midnight hour. but what a full board. I think we have like 9 carriers for next week. So anyone who did not hear their piece, please. Yeah, make sure to listen next week, and we will start with those pieces first and work our way through. Thank you, everybody, for sharing your work. And you know, thanks, Laurent. Thank you, Pam, for calling in and sharing, you know, both the gift of voice and great comments. And Rex, as always, thanks for being a great co-host. Lots of fun. And, yeah, I mean, I feel like I was doing the dog paddle trying to get pieces up on the board, but, you know, sometimes you just can't rush it. You know, the poetry was good. The comments were great. So I hope everybody, you know. But anyhow, great show. Thanks for sharing. And I hope you all have a wonderful night. Thanks, guys.
Hi, gang.